You're listening to Around Comics, episode 151. Chicago, this is Around Comics. I'm your host for tonight, Brian Salazar, and I'm joined by Tom Caters.
I feel like I'm on a date with Mike Norton.
Scotty Young.
I'm on a date with myself, because I don't fuck with people below me.
You only fuck people you love.
Yes. Only people.
And masturbation is your ultimate goal. Yeah.
And we're also joined by Mike Norton.
I'm sad.
Who are you on a date with, Michael Norton?
Obviously, I'm lucky to have what I got.
As anyone who's dating me feels.
Somebody's not here tonight because they actually are on a date.
Yes, Chris is not here tonight.
Where is he?
He drove an hour and a half north to
tell somebody to put the lotion in the bathroom.
Milwaukee to visit and maybe go on a date.
Isn't that really how misery started?
Oh shit! Right now, Greg Rucka's on a bed and Chris is telling him a story about how they used to treat slaves that would escape. Yeah. Oh, it's not that bad. They wouldn't kill him. Yeah. It would be like throwing out an entire pie.
Yeah, right? Rucka's on a bed with a 2x4 on his ankles, and Chris is going. Seriously, with a sledgehammer.
Swear words. Yeah. With all the where's the cockadoody, Mr. Terrific?
Yes, Chris is
hobbling Greg Rucka right now.
He drove to Milwaukee. Greg was having a couple of signings in Milwaukee.
Put the lotion in the basket, Greg.
And they decided, Chris went up there to, go out afterwards.
Yeah. Someone checked to see if Greg Rucka
As far as I know. As far as we know, that's the story.
Anybody
I don't know.
Anybody that lives in Milwaukee right now, go to an old city, go to the city building, city hall, look at all the blueprints of the old city. Make sure there's no old barns that aren't on maps anymore, and have old wells.
If Checkmate's delayed for 2 months, there's a fill-in issue. That was when Greg Rucka was in a pit in some barn where Chris was feeding him.
I'm afraid people are going to actually think we're kidding about this.
No, he's not. We're only halfway kidding.
But he's up there.
I would never treat Jeff Johns like that.
I know you wouldn't.
You touch him so gently.
I'd watch you from afar, Jeff Johns.
Yeah. I would never talk to you.
I'd never talk to you.
I would be 20 feet away
from
you.
I'd never travel to a different state for you. I'd just worship you from afar.
I'm happy with the distance.
There's not many people that I would cross state lines to go check out.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I told
Didn't
you.
Didn't Barry do that?
I don't leave my neighborhood often for even my closest friends. If people don't come to my house, fuck them.
You are like that. Yeah.
Norton and I are very much the same way. We have a tug of war to see.
It's like a silent tug of war. We just look
you
at each other.
That's
how it's going to be, isn't it?
We both know where it's going to be, either at my house or his house, which ends up being nowhere.
Can I see you from my window?
Yeah.
No? Well, I guess fans off.
Yeah.
Chris, on the other hand...
Hey guys, can't come to the show tonight. I got to go put my cock. I mean, check out.
How does his wife feel about this?
I'm not sure. I haven't talked to her about it.
I wonder if Marta thinks a relative died. I wonder if he's just like
my uncle in Milwaukee.
You didn't know.
How many uncles do you have?
Well, one less.
One's dead.
One less uncle.
I'm working late tonight.
Yeah.
He's in the car. Gotta get to Milwaukee.
But, you know, and he actually recorded on a little hand recorder or in his iPod sounds of printers and fax machines. So when she calls on his cell, he can play that in the background to make it sound like he's at work. No, hold on, honey. I'm getting a fax.
He actually...
It's amazing that he's not here and we're still making fun of him.
Yeah. Like, well, I told him, I said, you know, you're really, really making it easy for us.
It only works.
A lot of people throw softballs, but he's leaving us like a kickball, like a beach ball style kickball.
And then he was telling me about, he was going up there and he was going to get some man on the street recordings for the Monday episodes at the comic shop. I said, you don't have to try and cover up.
I don't want
what you're doing.
I'm going to show trip.
I'm going to go get some man on the street recordings in Milwaukee. Why Milwaukee? No reason.
There's
nothing odd about that. Oh, Greg Rucka's having a signing. Oh, really? Weird.
Kidding. That is crazy small world.
Wow, I can't believe he's there. Maybe I'll talk to him. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I'll have time.
We might run into
with
him.
All the interviews I'm going to do with people.
I don't know. He's there? Are you kidding me? I just so happen to have a reservation for two at a fine dining restaurant, candlelit table, in the corner by theirself. Maybe he'll go with me.
I had him put a chessboard on.
I have a chessboard?
All right. Well,
that portion of the show.
So there's the
ridicule portion of the show.
That's where Chris is at tonight. I hope he's enjoying himself. I hope Greg makes it live.
Greg's okay.
Yeah, I hope he's okay.
Greg, email us.
Good luck.
We should remind everyone that this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection point blank to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price.
Goddamn.
Get your copy today for only $9.72. You can now read Ed Brubaker's amazing 5-issue prologue to the critically acclaimed Sleeper for less than $10. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. It's your source for all sorts of trades and paperbacks and deluxe hardcovers.
Really cutting down on
Remember, that. All orders over $50 ship free in InStockTrades.com. Check it out.
Watch out, Brubaker. Chris is gonna wear you as a skin tuxedo in a few weeks, too. He's going to find wherever you are. Make a lampshade.
Oh, Jesus.
Out of Chris Claremont.
Also, I'd like to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded every Friday night.
I'm supposed to read that part. I'm
I know, but you were...
Here we go. Dad's gone.
Go ahead.
Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would like to meet you.
Yeah.
We would like to stalk you.
Yeah. Please come in. We have a pretty cozy well in the basement.
No pie today, though. We didn't get
no
pie.
I'm sorry. Goddamn. Listen, guys bleed me dry.
Brought pie once.
Yeah.
Jeez, you know.
Well, you do something crazy like bring pie, you're going to get us hooked.
When you throw pie in the
mix. That's
the
story of my life.
First one's free.
It was like that week when I brought crack cocaine. And the next week, everyone was like, where's the crack?
I'm all itching myself.
Listen, man.
God damn it.
It's a one-time thing. You want me to bring crack every week? I'm not made of money.
All right. What are we talking about? I guess it's time for...
Top of the stack.
Top of the stack.
Top of the stack.
Of the stack.
That's right. Top of the stack. The chance for us to tell you what we've been reading.
How you should feel
and
about
how you should feel.
This is what you like.
This is what you like.
You know you like it.
Do I start?
Yeah, Tom, why don't you... why don't we do it differently? Why don't you start?
Yeah, because we've gotten away from that, and I feel like that is what people are mostly complaining about. I feel that's really where most of the complaints come from.
Miss a show, and...
Yeah, you miss a couple weeks, and all of a sudden...
Why aren't you listening?
Sorry.
Damn you!
Yeah, we demand...
You know what I've been doing. I've lost time. I just woke up, and I was here. Like, wait a minute.
What's going on?
Call Art Bell.
She's still recovering from
Tell
the...
About
I have this thing underneath my skin. I can't figure out what it is.
A shadow person. my top of the stack was Jonah Hex, number 25. I actually dropped Jonah Hex about 2 or 3 months back.
So why did you pick it up again?
It was like a slow week, and Russ Heath was doing the...
What?
Did the art in it.
No
so
way.
So that's why I picked it up, yeah.
I didn't even know he was alive.
Yeah, well, I dropped Jonah Hex because it does a lot of one-and-done stories, and that's pretty much how they that's how they roll in that book. But they did a couple one-and-done stories where the twist at the end didn't twist in the fact that, like, if you take something and you try and twist it and the two ends don't meet. Like, it was just like a story where I read the whole thing, and at the end I was like, I don't understand how any of these things match up. And that happened 2 months in a row, so I dropped it.
What brought you back to it?
Russ Heath art.
So Russ Heath.
And what I loved about this story is the fact that it's about an older Jonah Hex. It's not like the Jonah Hex you've been seeing in the series so far. And what I love about it is he's sort of a character like Han Solo, to break it down for you kids out there. You know, he's like this sort of, he's a bad guy, but you always think he has sort of a heart of gold.
Right.
That things are going to turn all right for him. He's going to meet some woman. He's going to have a kid. And he's not that bad of a guy. But this story deals with the fact that when he's older, he did meet somebody. He had a kid. And he sort of fucked it up. And he's sort of just a sad old man at the end of his life. Yeah. Which is sort of, yeah, I mean, it's like seeing Han Solo, you know, sort of old and depressed.
What's that?
I'm just trying to break it down for the kids, because I realize that maybe my references aren't, you know.
Maybe that's why I don't.
Aren't working for the children out
the
there.
The kids out there would get Han Solo.
Listen, I aim for the 40-year-olds.
Okay,
the kids. Previously, yeah, I aim for the kids. That's who reads comics. Kids don't read comics, they're reading manga, which I'll get to.
Manga.
For the
kids, we mean the Blue Ranger.
I mean, I'm talking about for the quote-unquote kids out there. But the story goes
even that,
that
would be too
we see,
old.
We see Jonah Hex, who's now, like, prospecting gold.
Ooh.
He's not, like, a bounty hunter. And it takes you a little while to figure it out in the story. They don't give it away right away. And you see him see some bandits riding over the horizon and a bunch of people chasing him. And he decides, well, I'm going to take these people on. I'm going to get money from the people chasing him for taking these people on. And he does. He still shows that he's still got some moves. You know, he's a little old, and he references it. But the cool thing with the Russ Heath art, too, though, is that it's Jonah Hex, and he's older, but you don't pick up on it right away. It takes a little while to pick up that he is older. Because what happens is one of the people chasing these bandits is his son, who he's never met. And
I am your father.
The awesome thing in it is when you see, yeah, it's exactly like Han.
For the kids.
Yeah,
for the kids.
Yeah, it's
it would
for
be
the
more,
children.
Wouldn't
you,
it be more like Luke?
The cool thing is when his son shows up in the book, my first thought when I saw the art was like, oh, he looks like Jonah Hex. And I was like, oh, well, that's bad. You can only draw one type of person. And it took a little while, so I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Yeah,
that's
he's supposed
why.
To be Jonah Hex's son, you know. And at the end, there's a great moment where Jonah Hex can either choose to, you know, sort of like embrace his son or say, fuck off and walk away. And
I want an abortion.
He was a failed abortion. And he said, fuck off, and he walked away. And it's sort of very sad, but it fits because
he's
if you know
bastard.
The history of Jonah Hex, you know, the way he ends up, you know, because he's part of the DC Universe, he ends up just like a stuffed character, you know, in a traveling circus. You know, he doesn't have some great history or legacy that he leaves after.
He ends up a stuffed...
Yeah, he's just in
like
a circus.
Mannequin?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's what happens to Jonah Hex, yeah. That's how he ends up.
So, yeah, they couldn't really write in all of a sudden this touching love story.
But it's a great sort of Western story in the fact that it actually takes advantage of the fact that you could show him being older.
Right.
He's sort of, you know... Not it doesn't turn out well for him.
Are
he
all,
meets
all the stories disjointed? Like, well, not necessarily disjointed, but like they don't necessarily have a continuing theme through them.
No, there's a few. They did like an origin story where they had three issues in a row that sort of matched up. But most of them are just sort of one and done. And
that's
they can
interesting
sort of
that they're
place.
Keeping that up.
Yeah,
that's not usual for at least this day and age.
No, they delved into the continuing story and then backed away. And I really liked it. I don't know if I'll pick up the next one.
So did they give you any? I mean, so there was no clue in the beginning. They didn't tell you that this was set further on in
his
life.
Well, they did. It was set up as being a story told to his grandson.
So you sort of see
it, but you don't necessarily know how old or how...
Right, when
know,
it's taking
he, how much he's lost of who he is. Because you always see Jonah Hex in the stories be sort of like the guy who knows what's going on all the time.
Right.
He's always the one that knows, like, the solution to something.
He's one step ahead of...
He's the one step ahead, and this whole story is, like, a step behind, and it's kind of sad. Because he's the last one to figure out that, you know, it's his son. You know, he's
what
the
was
last
it?
One to...
Did they name his son?
Yeah.
What was his name?
It's like
Bob.
Jason Hex.
Bobo. Jason Hex.
Did he know that it was that he's Jonah Hex's son? Did they know? I mean,
did he know?
Did the son know that was
yeah.
his father?
Yeah.
That that's his father. And okay.
It's pretty obvious. I mean, Russ Heath drew him like they looked alike.
So. Well, no, but I didn't know if the character
knew. He confronted him and said, "I just want to talk to my father."
That's what I was wondering.
I just want to talk to my father. So it was a very good. It sort of sold me back on the book a bit after I been sort of left adrift with it.
Very good.
That's cool.
Scotty, or you want to wait?
You
want to wait?
Go ahead. I'll do mine after yours.
All righty. Mike, you want to go? Have you been reading anything? I know you're kind of thrown, you know, sort of under the bus.
I have been reading stuff, but I mean, I just started reading Checkmate, and I can't really say anything about it yet because I haven't finished the first trade.
Hmm.
So far, it's okay. I mean, something we were just talking about, Greg Rucka. That's funny.
He's never far from our thoughts.
I started reading it this week, and it's first three pages. I thought for sure. This is not the book for me. I'm the one person that doesn't get this book. Because I thought... I thought about Checkmate when I was reading it was, wow, the whole hierarchy, Black King, White Queen, all this stuff, that sounds really cool until you have to read about it. And then it gets really confusing for some reason. It's like, you got to keep up with all these guys? That's the worst bureaucracy I've ever heard of. But now I'm in the middle of it, and I'm starting to like it. So
you start to pick up on how the structure works.
It all comes down to the character thing. You start to get to know the characters, and now you want to see what they do. So obviously, it's more well written than I was going to give it on the.
I had the exact same problem with it, and in fact, I stopped reading it because I
wanted to soldier through because I bought the first two trades. I didn't want to feel like an idiot. I'm not done with it yet, but it'll probably be like, I don't know, like Firefly was when I watched it. I hated it at first, and by the time it was over, it was like, oh, why did you
take this guy from me?
I was reading single issues when it first came out, and I read the first, I don't know.
Oh, it's easier to
two or
like
three.
That, then, yeah.
And that's, yeah, and so I'm like, I got to wait until the trade, but I haven't actually picked up the trade
but
yet.
So far, it's picking up, so that's a positive sign.
I think he gets better at sort of setting up the conflicts between the characters too. At the beginning, it's sort of free floating a bit, and you don't quite know what's going on. As he gets along, you pick up more of the themes of what he's doing.
Well, you read it, and you're just like, you know, this is a Greg Rucka book. I mean, it's practically
it's
Queen and Country,
yeah, just with superheroes,
right?
Yeah.
And you know, that's not for everybody. You know, I mean, it's like some people like Tom Clancy, some people don't. You know, that kind of stuff. So.
All right.
Like Tom Clancy?
No, I don't.
Do you like Grisham?
I like Grisham too. And I was just Grisham this week.
Yes, you were. We'll have to get to that.
Yeah, I'll tell you about that story there. You didn't know that, did you, Tom?
That you dressed up as John Grisham?
No, I was on a 4-day trial this week in the jury.
Oh, really?
All week, every day. Yeah. Anyway.
Did you ever stand up and make a speech?
No. I wanted to.
12 angry men, one angry man. One angry man and 11 confused people. Why are you so angry?
What are you yelling about?
I don't know! I've seen a lot of movies, goddammit! Someone needs to be strong!
Yeah. Scotty's objecting to shit just from like, the jury box.
I object!
You can't object! I object as to form! This is way more boring than movies.
Yes.
I need some midget to come in like Tom Cruise. Start yelling at somebody. You can't handle the truth.
All right, my top of the stack. We'll get to the
jury
story.
Yeah,
we'll tell that
later.
My top of the stack is The Ride: The Key to Survival, #1, from Tom Coker. He wrote.
I like this guy now.
I have fallen in love with this stuff.
Who the fuck is Tom Coker?
I have no idea, but I happen to see that
I know who he is now.
He wrote and drew and did the cover for this.
Can't be good then.
Letters by Michael Thomas.
Could be good.
He wrote it and drew.
You know, he makes movies too.
What?
Yeah,
what the fuck?
Tim Seeley's told me about it.
I'm gonna call my girlfriend and make sure
I need to find out where he's doing a signing so I can
drive there
and
so I can drive there.
He's my new.
He makes movies too.
Well, I know he's been around for a while.
Who published that?
This is published by Image Comics.
Nice.
12 Gauge is the publishing house. The Ride's like, is it an ongoing or is it a
It's an ongoing of one shots, and every story has to revolve around the car.
Oh, around this.
Whatever the code was, like 67 or
Oh, it's the same
Camaro.
Car.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
Every
that's
story
the...
can be written. I mean, every story is in whatever time the writers want to do, but it always has to
do something about
the revolve around that.
They probably should have picked something other than an 87 Plymouth Horizon.
No, it's a
PT Cruiser.
It looks like an old Camaro.
Only so many stories.
I don't know exactly what the car is. Anyway,
what an odd choice.
It's black and white. If you listen to 2 weeks ago, I talked about Tom Coker. He did the art on the Moon Knight number 13, the only really readable issue of the 13 issues of Moon Knight that came out.
I was going to say, I don't remember that, but now I do.
The story is
pretty... I saw that issue, too. I was very surprised.
Yeah. I took back a lot of the bad things I said about...
Well, I didn't read it, so I can't I just know that the artwork looked really cool.
His art style, I think I described it before, is sort of Ashley Wood meets Bill Sienkiewicz, but not nearly as crazy as that, like cleaner than that.
He doesn't have a Bluetooth phone in his ear?
No, it's very, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
It's very sort of stylized, but gritty and, I don't know, realistic kind of. But the story is pretty simple. It's about a woman who's driving, about a guy who is driving this Camaro. And it turns out he had kidnapped this woman, brings her back to his trailer park, and is going to torture her. He's crazy, religious fanatic freak. And it turns out he also has a sister or brother, you're not sure what it is, living in like a pit outside of his trailer park, and he feeds these people.
So it's the fucking theme tonight.
Jesus Christ.
And she's trying to escape, and it's a pretty basic story.
So it's like
all
the rides are always going to be like there's a trade out of the first collection of stories of the ride.
How many have come
here is
so
volume one.
Seven probably.
Yeah, maybe 12.
Well, volume two is advertised on the back.
About 12 to 13. 13. Yeah,
okay.
Like people like Jason Pearson, Brian Stelfreeze, Sanford Green.
I have not heard anything about this.
A bunch of people have.
I've heard about it.
I'm angry because I haven't heard anything
about this. Chris Bruner, artist, did one of them. I mean, they're great. All the art's always really, really great. I can't say that I've read too many of them, but
yeah, I had never read it before, and like I said, the only reason I picked it up is because of this guy's name that I had seen on that other issue, and really, I mean, the art is the selling point of this issue. It's fantastic. It's just
and they're all black and white.
Okay.
You're like a Tom Coker fiend.
I am now.
You're a Tom Coker machine.
You're a Cokerhead.
I will buy anything that this guy draws from now on.
You hear that, Tom Coker?
Yeah,
he's done some other stuff. Comic work.
We did Exiles covers here recently. We saw that.
Is that what he did?
Yeah, but
I know he started out like.
I want to say I've seen some old
2000 AD. I think he did do some older, like years ago though.
Yeah, though that's what I'm remembering.
Yeah. I just think he's phenomenal. Yeah. I absolutely love the stuff. And this, like I said, the story is good, creepy, kind of like serial killer, crazy swamp hillbilly psycho.
Swamp hillbilly monster.
I'd say the art is a little closer to, like, less Ashley Wood and more like Travis Charest with a little...
Really?
Yeah, because of the slightly realistic side.
Yeah.
If you look at this, there's a panel right here, to me, right there, looks exactly like, not exactly like, but similar to the way that Charest approaches faces. But with a little bit more of Sienkiewicz
with the drawing.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, the Ashley Wood feel I get for it is more just sort of
because
the
it's very
the
heavy
black. Yeah, the very heavy inked. It's not wild sort of out of control.
Yeah, it's not abstract.
No.
Yeah.
I would have described it more on the Alex Malev side of things.
Yeah.
Tommy Lee Edwards.
Tommy Lee Edwards.
I mean, it's such a heavily photo-influenced book.
Right. But then it does have the Sienkiewicz sort of...
Well, there's drawing involved, always good.
And that's about it. I mean, it was just... Like I said, I just think this guy's a phenomenal artist, and I hope to see a lot more from him. So.
Sal Cokerhead.
I'm a Cokerhead. There you go.
Wouldn't it have been great if he was drawing the Moon Knight from the beginning?
I said if he had drawn that book from the beginning.
I don't know if I would have liked it anymore because the story did kind of plot along.
That 13th issue was a different writer. Oh. It was like a different writer had written that book.
Who wrote Moon Knight?
It was
Charlie Houston.
Oh, Houston.
That's who I'm talking about.
Well, that leads right into your.
Wow,
what's
you're
your
trying
top of
a segue. And I bet you knew that.
That's
I bet you knew that when you asked that question.
You're good. You're good. What Charlie Houston comic book have you been? Moon Knight.
Yeah. Go F yourself. Yeah. Asshole.
All right. What are you reading?
I read
what have
no
you
comics
been
again.
Reading?
Are you ever going
to
read comics?
I'll come back to them again. I read.
You're not missing them.
I read a shitload of trades this year, and you guys can attest to that.
You did read a lot.
Read a shitload of trades, and now
you keep buying them, so I know you're going to have to read them sooner or later.
My next pick isn't necessarily a traditional pick either. So,
well, I read a shitload of trade paperbacks this year, and
U.S. history.
I just got a little overload of.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily love everything I've read, and I just found myself in a thing of wanting to read some stories that had endings to them. I guess you know, like there's only so many stories that I can get in. And keep reading having an ending going on.
Do you find yourself reading? Do you read stuff of like yeah? Let's say you have comic books and you have like novels and you have. Do you find yourself reading a lot of one, or do you mix?
No, I can't. I have a hard time mixing. Like,
so you read one.
Yeah,
a
when
lot
I'm
of,
reading. Yeah, when I'm reading a trade or when I'm reading one title, I read all trades of that title. Or even when I'm reading novels, I don't have two novels going.
Yeah, I could see that because what I do is, and this is part of my obsessive compulsive thing, is that on the train when I'm going to work, I'm reading a novel, and on my way home, I read a comic book. That's the weird thing that I do. But I could see why you would get burnt out on
it. Yeah. For me, I mean, truly has come down to, I mean, there's a lot of books I enjoy, like Why the Last Man Trades and 100 Bullets and DMZ. But I really enjoy them, but it's almost like I just need to take a little break because I need to have some kind of resolution at some point with the stories that I'm reading. So I've just taken a break and I've been reading books, and I read Already Dead by Charlie Houston.
His novel?
One of his novels. He had another series of novels that came before these, but these are kind of the Joe Pitt case books. There's two books in a series. The first one's Already Dead. The second one's No Dominion. But it was really fucking good. I really, really enjoyed it. It's a vampire book.
Really?
But it's modern day, like, pulp crime noir style.
How long is it?
260-some pages.
Was it, like, a fast read?
Very fast. Because it's written from in a noir kind of style, there's no he said, she said.
It's a narrative.
It's a narrative. You know, just the narrative runs very quickly. And it was the character itself, Joe Pitt, is your main character, who's a vampire, who kind of is, I don't want to say a PI because he's not a PI. He's just a guy who does odd jobs for the different clans in New York. Like the different, you know, the vampires have created their own society, and he's kind of he has no affiliation with any of them. He used to, but now he just kind of does little jobs and gets by. And it's just kind of a tale of one of the jobs he gets in and how fucked up it turns out to be. But the characters are so interesting. I think that, again, the way that he approached the writing from the noir standpoint, where everything in the story is from Joe's point of view. So it's very easy to stay in the story the entire time. You don't ever feel like you're being bounced around too much or anything. And he bases the whole, you know, because the vampire stuff, there's so much vampire stories and books.
I was going to ask, like, how much would it be grounded in maybe like your traditional vampire?
Well, that's type? I think the brilliant thing that I really enjoyed is if anybody has read I Am Legend.
Not yet. I do have it.
I Am Legend written in the 70s and was kind of based around his vampire mythos was based around an actual virus that humans get. And so it's rooted in a reality. Like, this virus gets in your body and it does this to your to our system, and it needs blood to keep itself going. So it actually turns vampirism into a real situation. And this book, Charlie Houston, I think, has used that same kind of thing as his basis of what vampires are.
Is there a mysticism to it?
It's
very biological.
It's biological situation. Okay. The vampires themselves don't know a hell of a lot about it because let's say Manhattan, out of the whatever 8 million people on the island, only 4,000 of them are vampires. So they don't have the resources.
They don't have
the
network
resources to
of
be able
vampires
to find out that much about how, what the virus actually is.
Yeah.
It's only to their instincts. So I think having it work like that,
almost like you would be like an albino, as opposed to, you know, I mean, it's just you have an affliction or whatever it is.
And they understand, and you know.
Sal's the one that said albinos are like vampires.
I didn't say that.
Kill them.
Basically, you know, he sets it up to where the virus gets in your body, and it basically eats throughout your system and takes your body over. So if you were, from there on out, any kind of sickness that you get, the virus itself eats that sickness and takes it away. That's why you can heal. It basically, the virus wants to live, just like any
like
virus.
Any
virus, it wants to live, so it's going to do what it has to do to hurt your body to live.
Now, and Joe Pitt, the main character, he's not a vampire.
He is a vampire.
Oh, he is a vampire. Is one. Okay.
And what you kind of get from the very beginning is zombies.
What?
Well, zombies at the beginning, what they think are, it's the only thing that they, again, this is all based in reality. There's no mysticism involved.
Right.
So the only thing these kind of zombie-looking characters pop up eating on people, and
so they're zombies.
And they don't have any other point of reference to call them zombies, but it ends up...
don't spoil it.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it. Obviously, it's not. There's nothing mystical. These things are not rising from the dead. It's nothing to do with that. And that's not even... That's not
they're
a major,
people.
Major plot line through in the story. But
well, it sounds good.
It sounds
like a good book.
And it is one of those books, when you get to the end, it's kind of that book that you hope it's going to be when you get to the end and it fucking ramps up and the shit starts going down and you're like, oh yeah, I'm finishing this tonight. I am not stopping. It really felt like that. And it's been a long time since.
I know you've been enjoying reading the novels, because so far the three books that you've been reading.
Well, there's been the other one. I read The Road. I didn't enjoy that one.
I didn't know you. I've seen that a lot on the train. Why did you?
Yeah, everybody's
a lot
been
of
reading
on
that.
The train.
Why did you pick the Charlie Houston novel? So
another recommendation. Like in that big list on my blog.
Oh, okay.
There was, you know, probably 20, 25 people recommended huge list of
then
books.
And you bought them all.
I bought a number of. Well, I checked them out first and read.
But he's
going to
go.
Like,
the people that recommended the bad ones, he's going to go kick their asses though.
No, yeah. I mean, they deserve it.
What the fuck are you wasting my time for? Don't you know who I am?
I read something outside of my comfort zone.
What?
Yeah, I read a manga book.
A manga?
Manga! It's called Project X Challengers.
But you're not a 15-year-old girl.
Hey, what are you doing reading manga?
This book, Project X Challengers 7-Eleven. Project X is like a TV series that they do in Japan about businesses or
monkeys
inventions.
Monkeys flying spaceships.
Yeah, well... I wish.
No, sorry.
I wish it would happen.
Thinking about
but it was. They've done one about like ramen noodles, which I have on order. Which I'm.
Oh, you were telling me about that.
It's just about the story of how these businesses sort of grow and their innovations behind it. And I know it sounds really boring.
Yeah.
No.
But it. I read it like in 2 days because it's written.
That's amazing that is. That people seek that stuff out.
But what my fanboy guys recommended this to me, and I was like, it sounds really boring. They're like, read it. And I love it because what they do is they take those stories and they tell you those stories in the same way that if you're used to reading a comic book, that's how you read it. They have
look
a roll
out,
call.
The numbers are wrong!
Yeah, no,
we're $5 short in the register!
But that's how they do it, because they sneak it in like that. Because what they do is they have like a Justice League roll call at the beginning of all like the guys who helped make
that's
the 7-Eleven.
To me.
And then they have all this crazy shit, but in between when you're reading people like yelling at each other, they tell the story about the guy, the Japanese guy that invented the refrigerator that has an opening in the back and the front. You're like, someone had to invent that,
sure.
Because 7-Elevens in America were huge size-wise. So you could always restock stuff, but in Japan they were half the size. So in order to fix that problem of like restocking, they invented refrigerators that had openings in the front and the back, and someone had to invent that. And I know, as everyone's looking at me, it sounds really boring, but it was kind of fun to read about.
I'm not even thinking about the content of the book. I'm astounded by the difference in culture.
Well, it is funny.
That we can be on the train and they're on the train there reading about a comic book about a guy that invented...
It is the guy that brought the 7-Eleven.
Funny how the overseas,
Japan,
how, like, they have actual genres in their comic books.
Oh, yeah. I mean, then this is a genre of comic book that's popular.
At the age of 34, Hideo Shimizu was assigned the task of store development.
Yeah, I was totally blown away by how... because
is he wearing a costume?
No. Suit and tie. The way they explain how things go on, like, they bring in, like, business elements. They bring in, like, technical things, but they tell it to you in, like, a comic book way of, like... This is the challenge they faced, and they surmounted that challenge. And then by the end, you're like, oh, you actually understand why 7-Eleven was such, like, a huge thing for retail, and they snuck it in while giving you, like, this sort of kitschy... For Americans, you know, like, it's kitschy, but it also has a tremendous amount of actual, like, sort of interesting...
Well, the one thing that does sort of make sense, I mean, is that business in Japan is a completely different monster comparatively to business here. So, I mean, the culture of looking at it as, you know, something worth telling a story about.
Well, the 7-Elevens in America, when they started... And Japan had the main guy that started it had to convince his corporation to do it, because in Japan, the thought of a convenience store was just horrible. You would never have a convenience store. Everything is like a supermarket with discounts. And they were so successful that the American 7-Elevens became like the Japanese ones. They like switched it back on the originators. Hmm. Interesting. You know, and our model of convenience stores comes from what they did to the 7-Eleven that they observed. And that's like the really great part about the story. And it's sort of weirdly inspirational in a way too, because it starts off with two guys like in an empty office who are trying to convince their bosses that convenience stores would work in Japan. I loved it. It was great. And I got the ramen noodle.
I can tell. I mean, I'm amazed at how
the ramen noodle one's on its way. And I have the one about the Nissan X, which is also.
I remember I was looking for different podcasts to listen to, and I found one that was called, I think it was called Big Ideas or something like that. And it was all about, like, lectures, different types of lectures. I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. I love hearing different people's ideas on stuff. And this guy did a lecture on the creation of the English Oxford Dictionary, Oxford English Dictionary. It was like an hour and a half long lecture on the history of the creation.
Well, those things can be interesting.
And it was the most amazing, interesting lecture that I'd ever listened to.
My friends have lost their goddamn minds.
There's a great documentary about, one of my favorite documentaries I've ever seen is about the search for longitude. About, like...
The search for longitude.
Yeah, because latitude is easy...
I need some pie.
Latitude is easy to figure out in relation to other things, but longitude is really hard...
Come back, Chris.
...to figure out over the earth. And the thing is, the only way you can measure longitude is with a watch. But on a boat, back in the day, you couldn't have a watch because you have to have gears. And the motion of the boat would throw the gears off, so longitude couldn't be measured. And everyone's thought was you build a bigger and bigger clock, but the secret was to build, like, a tiny clock, which was, like, the stopwatch.
Oh.
Yeah, so here you go.
Scotty's lost it. All right,
Here's the thing about Scotty, though. When we talk about stuff that... he's not interested in, he sort of blanks out. But when he talks about Charlie Houston, ask him questions.
Hold on. First of all, I was talking about a book. And now you're talking about longitude.
And a watch. Movie. There's we talk about multiple mediums.
It was a documentary on longitude.
Yeah, it's odd.
Interesting.
It's odd that we went that direction. I didn't say it's bad.
I'm
correct?
Just saying, hey. I'm bringing
feigned interest.
All
that's
here.
All we're asking for. A little feigned interest.
Longitude kicks ass.
Well, I have another
Latitude's
one.
Longitude's for pussies. Longitude's.
I have another one, and it was sort of outside of my comfort zone and manga influenced.
Ooh.
Skate porn.
This was sort of on Mike Norton's recommendation. I picked up
The Atom.
And I think this is a older.
Please, five.
No, I picked up the Atom.
That's not a reco. That was like a pleading.
I did really like.
That's not my comfort zone.
It's not even the Crankcast anymore. It's just Mike.
Hello, welcome to
Please Buy
Johnny Adam!
It's a 30-minute infomercial.
Jesus, please.
I did really like the Adam this week.
I did, too.
But this book was Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life, Volume 1.
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know where that falls in.
That?
Well, you recommended Scott Pilgrim. You were talking about Scott Pilgrim
it's
one day.
And you shook Sal like a baby.
Yes.
You said, you will buy Scott Pilgrim.
I have no idea where this falls in the Scott Pilgrim line of books. I don't even know how many are up
there. I assume it's the beginning.
Precious Little Life, is that the first? Volume 1, it says. Precious Little Life, Volume 1.
I assume
that's the first one?
That's the first
one. Oh, really? Yeah. That was that actually really surprised me that that's the first one, because
you're used to multiple number ones telling the same
story. Well, no, it just sort of... I was surprised that it didn't explain anything. It just sort of drops you into the middle of this life of this kid.
It doesn't, but at the same time, it has that kind of modern kind of storytelling thing where it'll just drop a balloon right on somebody's face, and then this is so-and-so, brother of so-and-so.
Right, it did have that, yeah.
It does every one of the books. It's kind of like...
Well, this is... it's about Scott Pilgrim, who's this 23-year-old slacker kind of kid that's in between jobs and in a band.
He's Canadian.
He is Canadian, living in Canada, and he's dating a 18-year-old or 17-year-old high school girl because he just broke up with some girl that he was madly in love with, or she broke up with him. I don't know. They didn't really get into it that much.
Yeah.
And as the story goes on, he ends up... you learn a lot about his friends and the people that are in the band with, the guy he lives with who is gay, and they sleep together in a bed, but Scott Pilgrim's not gay.
Yeah.
How old is Scott Pilgrim again?
23.
Okay.
He's not gay, as far as I can tell. He says he's not, but I don't know. He ends up finding this other girl that is new to town, and he's sort of madly in love with her instantly, and now he's sort of on a quest to date her.
How old is the girl that's new in town?
They don't really say, but I think she's older. She's probably around his, 22, 23, the same age.
It's nothing creepy about
him. No, there's nothing. There was creepy parts about him dating the 17-year-old.
Yeah,
it was odd. It was, and all his friends made fun of him
that he was doing it, but
he never did anything. They never even held hands. He wasn't really dating her. He was just sort of. He was starting to date her, and it was easy. It was simple.
I always question people who write stories about. About guys who date younger. What was that? The Beautiful Girls or whatever? That one, same movie, same thing. Like, why?
It was weird.
Yeah.
And it's like instant. Like I said, that I was very surprised to find out that that's the first Scott Pilgrim volume, because it's like instantly. That's like the first page is you find out he's dating this 17-year-old girl. You don't know anything about this character other than he's 23 dating a 17-year-old in high school, and it's like, wow, that's really weird.
Yeah.
But then as it goes on, you find out he's not really dating her. They haven't done anything. I mean, they haven't even held hands, and he's not. It's just someone there. It's almost just like. Because he went through this relationship and it ended badly, it seems, and now he's just sort of
adrift,
trying to get back into dating, and it was the easiest thing, and it's there, and it's not going to last.
That was always my fallback.
17-year-old high school girl? Sure, why not?
Find a theater chick.
I'll just go for dudes.
But I found myself really, enjoying the story. It was funny, and at the same time, it had some sort of a little bit of an emotional connection with me.
Interesting thing about the book for me is because it has this. You do become attached to these. Obviously, I mean, this book is absurd in some parts.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ramona character, I guess that's her name.
Yeah, Ramona. Ramona Flowers.
She travels through space and time.
Through his dream.
Yeah.
To deliver Amazon.com.
Yeah.
Well, my brother does that.
Yeah, but they and it's like something that this kind of stuff, those kind of things, and like the video game elements that happen through it just happen matter-of-factly and then don't ever happen again and nobody says anything about it.
Yeah.
That's what's so awesome about the book.
It was...
And yet you still... still take it seriously, too.
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing is like, okay, he starts dreaming about this girl before he ever met her, and then all of a sudden he meets her, and he keeps having dreams about her, and that's why he starts to become kind of obsessed about her.
Well, they've set up a universe where that works, then.
Well, you know, but this is the first volume, and they don't explain any of it. It just happens. And then all of a sudden,
it's all about creating that.
But up until that point, it's very straightforward. The whole story is pretty straightforward. It's funny. Nothing weird happens, and then that happens, And you're still like, oh, well, he's just, he had a dream about a girl, and now he's just projecting it onto this girl. But then it turns out, no, she was traveling through his dreams.
Well, I think,
and she's aware of it.
I think it's all part of the story. I love storytelling like that, though, that leaves that's okay.
There are some movies and TV that I've seen that are like that.
The only problem
out every time.
The only problem I had with it is when I got to the point in this volume where it was like near the end, and all of a sudden things start to go extremely bizarre, and it's just weird. It kind of took away from that emotional resonance that I had with the characters. It almost, for some reason, because everything was just sort of this straightforward story about this kid, and then all of a sudden things just get wacky.
Right.
And it sort of took me out of it. I still enjoyed it, but it sort of like made those...
It took it,
that emotions,
two kind of books for a moment.
Oh, yeah, and it made the... Well, it made those emotions just less,
right.
You know, and for some reason. I still liked it, but it was just like, wow, that was really weird. Why did he do this? Yeah. Why did he throw that in there?
It almost feels like sometimes, like, no, but, like, sometimes comic book creators almost, and this could be wrong, just my opinion, but almost feel a slight fear to just...
Tell the story.
Just write a
normal story.
Normal story. Not to say, obviously, you still liked it, and I haven't read
the
book.
Yeah, I did like
bad it. That he did that, but
I find that
anytime there's a normality, they always feel like they have to throw something slightly weird in because it's a comic, but I don't know.
I can understand that criticism. I don't know if it necessarily applies just because I don't think this book was set up like that from the get-go.
Right.
I mean, this was never going to be a serious... I mean, it doesn't start out as a serious
book. No, it's not a serious book at all.
It doesn't... I mean, it's not really a strict slice of life either. I mean,
no.
It's kind of...
It is cartoony. It is...
almost like
because
a... It's almost video game-ish in the way that it tells its story. I mean, there's a lot of...
Yeah, there are things initially from the very beginning that always cue you into the fact that this isn't real life.
I think, I don't know if it's in this volume, but it may be in another one. He beats somebody up and gets, like, extra health. Like, extra health comes from the sky.
Yeah.
And gets it.
That's the weird shit that happens.
But to me, sometimes I think, like, if you set up, especially with, like, someone who has their own vision of how they're doing it, I think those ideas can be great sometimes.
Yeah.
Because
he's done stuff. I mean, Lost at Sea is awesome. It's a perfect example of this. It's a very serious, you know.
Yeah.
The only thing in common with Scott Pilgrim is that it looks that sort of style that he draws.
Yeah.
But I was
really kind of amazed at how quickly I was attached to the characters.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it was almost immediate and I really liked how he developed his friend. I can't think of his name. His roommate.
I can't remember his name.
Wesley or something like that.
Wesley Crusher?
No, it wasn't Wesley Crusher. But you do. I mean, I was just immediately. I had a connection with the characters and really liked the characters. The art I thought was good, mostly. Sometimes it was really good, but then sometimes it seemed like really weak.
Yeah,
you know, and I don't know if that was on purpose or you know what I mean. It was hard to tell sometimes because it seemed like some panels were so weak that they had to be on purpose. You know what I mean? But overall, I mean, I really did enjoy it. I was surprised at how much I liked the book. So.
That's one of those books that when I was reading it, I was wondering, do I like these characters because they look the way they do? Like, I don't know. I think I might be enjoying the book because of the way it's drawn, because it's being made into a movie.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, and I keep thinking,
how are they going to do
that? If I saw these guys like in real life, I don't know if I would think it's as cool. They have to look this way.
Well, there any other guy? I mean, if you just take their characters,
the whole thing, you know,
yeah, it's exactly. Like, it's the world in which it exists. If it's taken out of that, it's kind of like...
Yeah, that would be weird.
It's kind of like when you see any of these... It's Underdog, the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that doesn't work. He's a real dog. Come on.
No, it doesn't work, yeah.
Well, and those characters are like 100 other people that you know, that you do know. You know what I mean? It's like
well,
that you
a lot
see
of these
every day.
A lot of these characters are based on real people.
Real people
knows.
That he knows, yeah. So, it would be weird to take them out of the almost fantasy realm that they live in.
I enjoyed
the
mysticism.
We'll see, but it was good. It was very good. I will be picking up the next volume.
All right. Sweet.
There we go.
And anything else, Tom? You have anything else? Or?
No, I want to talk about 300 next.
All right, well then, that will end Top of the Stack. We'll be right back. All right, that's top of the stack. We're done with that.
I am a Spartan!
Tom wants to talk about 300. You recently rewatched
I rewatched it. And,
wasn't as good as Gladiator.
On the small screen, on the small screen, there was things that sort of concerned me a bit. That maybe I wasn't over...
Mike or I's house and watched it on the large screen.
I'm sure on the large screen I would have also been so awed that I would have missed like
watch
the
it
weird
little things. Because it's far enough away.
Oh, I changed. The TV's in
mine's like
place.
A Viewmaster now. It's like right on your face.
You have to go. You have to look from side to side really fast.
Yeah, the thing with
I'm starting to go fisheye.
Ironically, I hate IMAX movies because you have to do that. Yeah, I have a TV that's 3 feet away from my face.
when I rewatched 300 this time, I really loved the movie. The only thing that ruins this movie for me a little bit now is the last 5 minutes, where they really try and nail home the fact that like, as Americans, we're supposed to be really all about freedom.
Patriotic.
Yeah, and like they're fighting for our freedom, and then that's the point where up to that movie they do a really good job of historical fiction of letting you pick your own themes and let you sort of, I mean, it's pretty obvious what they want you to think, but they do a pretty good job of like not really like getting up in your face about it.
Right.
And then at the end I'm just sort of like, okay, listen, it's a bit much, because I know the Spartan idea of freedom was that you owned land and you weren't a woman, and yeah. you were free.
Well, for one thing, I have that problem with any kind of historical movie where they make some kind of
statement.
Well, not even statement, where they change.
Well, it's like it's a balance thing.
This,
you have to.
I don't know. Every time I see like an Old West movie where they're in this hick backwood town and like the guy's best friend is some black guy, and you're just like, I don't necessarily know if that would have flown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's just like walking around. It usually happens on TV more than it does in movies.
Yeah, right? It does happen more
on TV, where they try to generic, you know, homogenize everything, so that it's just like, we don't want to offend anybody. But what you're talking about?
Yes.
I you got me off. I've lost
my
train of thought.
Well, it's flipping out of a class system almost. Saying
I don't know. That's what the movie got in trouble for a little bit, didn't it?
Well, I think. Well, a lot of people picked on sort of the Persian, you know, Middle Eastern thing, which I thought was. I don't think that if you were gonna criticize it for something, I didn't think that was the thing you should have criticized
exactly.
it for.
Right,
I think you should have criticized it for the fact that throughout the movie, up until the end, you had the elements of where they sort of cast off the crippled guy, which is a fine. That's like a trope. That's a cliche of that storytelling of that period. That's something of that culture that fit into that storytelling. And then it was like, as the movie went along, like, it's like they tried to make you forget about that, and then at the end they were like, yes, we will die for you unless you are deformed, and then you should just not be part of our society. And it just didn't, that last 5 minutes didn't mesh with, like, the feeling of the
rest of
the movie.
Well, they make a declaration at the end and act as if they don't own slaves and that they don't discriminate against
them. That's what I said about the Old West movies, that they act like that they're this pillar of civilization.
Up until
when,
that last
meanwhile,
5 minutes for me, I thought it was really good at not doing that. Like, being like, here's how things... I mean, obviously, it's historical fiction. Obviously, things didn't happen
science fiction.
It's historical science
fiction. I literally went into that movie watching it from a strictly, like, moving sketchbook. Like, for me, like...
Movie.
I almost didn't even pay attention that much to any of what they were trying to, you know,
but
say
I think
about
that's
the culture.
Why watching it on, I think, a smaller screen, it bothered me more than when I saw it on
the big eye candy.
When I saw it on like a screen,
it's
like I was so blown away by how. And then as I watched it on a smaller screen, I was a little bit more like,
weirds
me out a little bit.
Like what you were saying when I saw the movie, that's all I saw too. Yeah. It's like, wow, this is a big. That's just
it could have just been a
coming
music
up with
video.
Crazy stuff.
A 2-hour music video.
Then,
I would have watched.
But then what he's saying, the stuff he noticed, I noticed that, but I'm also like, those people are crazy what they're saying about that. And then you start reading stuff about, like, Frank Miller's next project's about Batman going to beat up Al-Qaeda. I'm like, there is some kind of subliminal message here.
I think in that story, though, I think it's fine, except for the last... There's, like... they walk that line really good until the last 5 minutes where he makes that final speech where you're supposed to remember him. If they would have just ended with the guy making the speech in front of the Senate about remember us, it would have been fine until the point where he's like, let's all go fight for our beliefs. And it's like, well, the Spartan beliefs weren't necessarily what I would consider...
Yeah.
Things
well,
that
but right. I mean, are you necessarily supposed to agree with
I think
what
by
he's
the end
saying?
You're supposed to. I
well,
think
you may, or you may not. He's presenting a philosophical sort of
you
ideal.
May, no movie ever presents something as you may or may not. They present it as you should.
Well, no, it presents it. I mean, it's obviously Frank Miller's viewpoint in some regards.
Well.
And you may or may not agree with it, but he's certainly...
I don't.
Well, yeah.
That's why I didn't like it.
Yeah, but...
I don't think he failed. I think if that's the ending they wanted, they definitely got the ending they wanted.
I mean, I don't honestly remember
I don't know if that's...
I'm actually looking at the 300 graphic novel.
You're talking about the speech at the end with the guy with
the
eye patch.
It's very,
in front of
like,
the army, right?
Yeah, like, it's very... Let's get up and go fight.
I think you probably noticed more about that speech than most of the people. I mean, like we were saying, if anybody got up in arms about it, it was because of the
Persian.
The crazy depiction of Persians as
but that was so
ninja vampires.
To me, though, it's androgynous weirdos. But to me, that thing, that was so like out there that wasn't even, like, to me...
Rhinoceroses are not that big.
No, they're not.
No way.
That pisses me off.
And all those fucking ninjas. That's science fiction.
The ninja vampires.
Ninja vampires with the fucked up faces. I mean, that was so weirdly fictional. And then it got to the end, and it was like they wanted you to treat it seriously. Like
they made a connection. Yeah, they make the connection. I mean, because we were kind of talking about this outside before. It was like it's a stylized retelling of an idealized moral set of standards. You know, it's like the Spartans and he sort of peeled away everything about the Spartans and just went with this one incident and this one king and this one
story. Which is fine for that story.
And sort of told you this idealized version
of
history.
And then at the end, they sort of cast it aside a bit to be like, here's what...
Can they make the connection to present day then, and it doesn't... I mean, it's like, well...
I still love that. I thought the movie looked beautiful. I thought it was a great story, and next time I watch it, I just will stop it before I get to the last 5 minutes.
Really
I think it would be a great movie.
I mean, I think...
I gave it 4
Frank
stars on
Miller...
Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously has
Netflix,
a certain philosophy about how things should work. Yeah. I mean, you look at any of his work.
I don't think he has a philosophy.
Really?
No. I think when you hear him in interviews, the way that he talks about his quote-unquote philosophy, I just think he's just talks
all over
and everybody
place.
Buys it because they like...
Well, philosophy is just what he believes. I think a man has beliefs.
I think the thing is...
not in his movie.
I love what I did like about it is it looked... fantastic, and it worked visually in a lot of ways that a movie like that shouldn't work.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
That
much
slow motion.
Oh yeah, but
that
it shouldn't
be that
amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it looked, and that's why I have so much faith in Zack Snyder actually doing Watchmen, because he was able to take 300 and sort of figure out how to make it work movie wise. Like, how do you translate?
Do you really think it was that much? That it was that hard.
I think it is
that though, because it's pretty straightforward. That
but
book.
Think about how many times people try to do that and fail. Like how many
well,
times
just,
people try.
Well, that just means he has a grasp of how things should look and stuff. Yeah. I mean,
well,
yeah, give him credit for that. But yeah,
well,
I don't know. It's going to be tough doing Watchmen.
And that he could take a book and he didn't take it like a lot of comic book movie directors go and add in things that they like a Bryan Singer or something.
Yeah. No, the things that he did
add. You know, where
to
a Bryan Singer will get in there and go, I'm going to add this and this and this, but I don't actually read the comics. I'm going to add what I think.
I'm going to create my own mythology.
I think he did a really good job of taking that book and actually making it into a film and not be it. I mean, obviously, visually is very akin to that original source material, but it's not enslaved to it. Mm-hmm. It's inspired by it, and it has...
Well, it takes it to another level as well.
I think what he did best with it is he took the medium of film, and he allowed that to tell a better story than the graphic novel. Mm-hmm. I thought the movie was actually better.
I agree.
Than the graphic novel because he used the things that you can do in a film.
I do agree with you.
And made the story better. I mean, I don't think 300's a fantastic graphic novel.
No, it's kind of a what? Well, yeah. And I thought this about the movie actually after I saw it. It's definitely I don't want to say one trick pony, but there's just a kind of.
Yeah,
it's just one little path. It's basically an extended fight scene. The book is really just an extended fight scene.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen where that book came from.
I mean, they had to add stuff to the movie
to make it
so it doesn't
sense.
Seem like it's just one big fight.
To make it a story.
But it worked really well.
To give it a story.
To give it a plot.
Well, but he didn't add that much to the story, but I think he made it more
just a little bit.
He added much more to the actual Spartan where they were from with the he added the right amount of extra stuff to the actual city.
But he also kept the same visuals to that part too. It didn't seem like he wasn't like here's a panel. Well, there were instances where you're like, oh, that's what that panel looks like. It wasn't like, okay, we're 30 minutes in, let's put a panel that looks like from the comic book. The whole movie looked visually
so that's
what,
Sin City, which was, you know...
That was too masturbatory for me.
It was, I liked Sin City, but I think it could have been better because it was so
if they wouldn't
tied
have
made,
yeah,
to
if
the
they
book,
wouldn't have married themselves
so much.
Yeah. To me, I felt like Sin City... They tried so hard to go look,
right?
This is just
exactly
like the comic that if they would have pulled back at times, and it could have been just like what we said with 300,
right.
Where.
But then again, if they hadn't 300 may not have been.
I would have,
you know what I mean, as good as it was.
As I've heard criticisms that people didn't think that it was
accurate
enough, like the comic book. Like they wanted something like that Renaissance movie,
which was a very good movie. Looked really good.
No, it was a horrible movie. I just watched it.
I couldn't finish it. I didn't finish it.
But you can't do that.
I don't know.
It looked really good.
You cannot watch something that looks like Sin City in action.
Right.
It just looks like.
That's
cutouts.
Because it's not the same storytelling. Like, the thought that you can exactly translate something from one to the other, it's just like saying that you can take a book, like a 300-page book, and say, I'm going to make a two-hour movie, and I'm going to get everything from this book and tell you it to you the exact same way.
And I felt like for me, Sin City could have... if almost like they would have... Snyder would have done Sin City, where he would have said, okay, I understand the world. And I understand what film can do for this world.
And I understand how
I can ride that line.
Yeah. It's so tricky, though. I mean, it's so hard.
It's completely
that's why
tricky.
300 is so good. What he did with it is
that's
so good
saying.
Because
so
he was able to do it so well. It's rare that you're going to find anybody to do it. I mean,
I'm really interested to see what Snyder does with Watchmen. And because Watchmen visually has like a very certain look to it of how. He's obviously someone who has interest in doing it visually. What's he going to do?
There's
to get
so
agree
much
with you,
in
it's
that,
just,
though. That's
it's
the
hard,
thing.
Yeah, there's just... It's so much. It's hard to find. I mean, up until now, you really couldn't find directors like Snyder or Rodriguez who saw this material and said, I want to make a movie like the book rather than put my stamp on this book.
Right.
What do you guys think is going to be so hard about... The visuals of the Watchmen.
Well, like the thing with the...
Not the
Doc
visuals.
Manhattan.
No, it's just that you...
Well, I think the visuals would be difficult because I think...
Really?
Well, I think...
It's not the... Like the Frank Miller thing about like, how do you make blood look like this? I think what it is like... To me, the parts of Watchmen that really work really well are like the sections with Dr. Manhattan where he's like going back through time and going forward through time and like... Right.
I think that is going to be
easy. It's going to be really.
Awesome.
Because there's movies that do that. They do that sort of time travel type thing, you know, back and forth and back and forth through that. But to me, it's like Snyder. To me, taking the same way with 300 of taking that visual and you know, there's ways of doing blood in movies that sort of look cool, but he also took it and made it look like the comic book version. You know, like he didn't
it's going to be hard to... Yeah, you can easily make something travel through time. It's been done 1,000 times in movies, but how do you do it that it still has the same...
I think
look and feel of Watchmen. To me, it's just there's so much depth in that book overall.
Yeah, he's proven, I think, that he can probably handle.
Yeah.
He's going to be able to figure that out. My problem is, like, Watchmen is
such a long story.
It's such an epic story, and at the same time, it's a very...
They're small parts.
Distinct. It's like a mystery. It's an epic. It's so many. You know, Alan Moore writes these extremely layered kind of things. It's like, is he going to make a movie that's extremely layered?
I don't think you can.
Though, is when you see people talk about, like, oh, I read Watchmen, I was sort of bored by it. But also by the same point of, like, Watchmen doesn't have an ending to any movie audience is going to be surprised by.
Oh, yeah.
Not anymore. Watch Watchmen and watch that whole movie and get to the end and be like, oh, my God, that movie blew my mind because that story is told a thousand times.
That was so very, like, new to comics.
Yeah.
But that's even at the time that Watchmen was a revolutionary comic, that story would not have been new to other mediums.
So that's the weird thing to me is, like, how...
That's what his challenge lies in. How do I take this story that has been so revolutionary to... The comic book medium
at a time 20 years ago,
yeah, and then try to make film goers today feel like they're getting
that's why I think it's going to have to be so different. Yeah.
I think it has to be, and I just don't think there's any way that he's going to have to pick one sort of thread from that book.
Yeah,
to
that,
do
that'll be the weird and thing.
It's going to be the Rorschach part, I think.
Yeah, I think it'll be more of the murder mystery and the rest of it will almost be
backdrop.
Yeah, I just think you're getting into way too many things. You couldn't do it in 3 hours.
And that's
the difference between
doing a 300, which is
simple.
I mean, the book is practically a storyboard for the movie. It's like, I don't have to. It's a children's book.
I mean,
it is.
And then a Watchmen where it's like, oh, I got to go write some shit down. I can't do this.
We were talking about 30 Days a Night. I mean, why it made, I thought, a good film was because it's a simple story. There's not a whole lot to
it.
But
I think, the one thing I really, when Watchmen comes out, like, I'm always sort of worried about the fact that Watchmen's going to get panned by so many people who have never seen the movie. And, like, people are going to be like, Watchmen's going to be terrible and have never seen the movie.
I thought you said never seen a movie. Okay.
No, I've never seen the movie and be like, oh, Watchmen's horrible. It's going to be horrible. Sure. Can't do the comic. But it's like, you should be able to watch the movie in and of itself.
Yeah, well, that you're going to have to.
Like, because they can't do the
they
same
can't do
thing.
They you can't know? Do like, the book.
Yeah, I mean...
Go into it knowing
and
that.
And why would you want to? Because you've read the book.
Right.
Why would you want
you can't do the book for different reasons. You can't do the book, A, because it's very long and there's different lot of levels to it as far as a lot of characters. You can't do the book because of what we said, where if you just do the book...
It's not going to surprise
you're going to look at... People are going to be like, this is a fucking... You know, again, this is the story. That's your big twist.
Because people have used
people
it so
People will
many.
See that twist coming from a mile yeah. off in
sure.
a movie today. You know,
oh, yeah.
especially movies that... Every movie tries to have some giant twist. Mm-hmm. The Watchmen does not have a giant twist, to my mind. No. Maybe it was a giant twist at the time, but it's not...
Now it's been used.
It is not a giant twist.
Yeah.
So in a movie form, I'd be hard-pressed to figure out how they're going to... take that and make that the big thing. Like, oh, it's him.
I don't think they can. I think he has to take sort of the ideal of it and do something different. And
do
it's
something
piss.
Visually interesting.
Yeah.
And do something sort of...
Well, you know what? He's got to make this movie for the general public then. I mean, it's
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is the first comic book movie, honestly, that you cannot try to make for comic book fans. Weirdly enough, like, the biggest comic book to comic book fans... I don't know if the movie can be made
for comic book fans. It would never match anyone because you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way. And you already see, every time you see, like, on a forum or someone talks about the Watchmen movie, people are like, oh, it's going to suck, it's going to suck. And I'm like, I feel like I always want to be like, you should just watch the movie. It might only be to you,
right.
like, 5% of the book, but... Isn't it cool that you get to see?
Isn't 5% better than nothing?
I always say that with like the any movie that's based on a novel or anything, as long as it's a good movie. I don't like as long as you approach it like, okay, this is going to be a good movie. If it leaves stuff out of the book, so fucking what? I already read the book.
If this 2-hour movie is good.
Yeah.
And it's got just a portion of Watchmen, then you should be really, really happy
and
if
that's
that happened.
I think that's my problem with a lot of comic book movies is it's like they're married to the material to a degree, and then they try to add their own stuff to a degree, but then it's this weird mishmash of shit that doesn't...
Well, like, we have to please general audiences. Yeah, like, we're trying to go after kids.
Try to
we're
make
trying
a tell, good movie with the material.
Take this story and tell 10% of it, but tell the really good 10% and do it really well
take
and
the
make
character,
it great.
Take the character and this thing that we have for you, we have a nice foundation, and just make a good movie.
Well, it's trying it's trying to please so many different people,
right.
And I mean, when you're working in the studio,
I'm looking
system,
forward to the
Watchmen like,
movie because I'm really looking forward to seeing someone even attempt
it.
To do it. To me, is like a very
Did you see
brave,
the,
but I don't
thing,
think
very
the pictures
interesting
of the,
and very
of the war room.
It'll be like a fun thing to watch happen, you know, like in front of you know, like
I mean, I don't feel that Watchmen is as big and burly for somebody in the movies to tackle as maybe you guys think or other people think, because movies have been based on books much longer and deeper.
Yeah.
Novels,
well, I think,
much longer
I think, well,
and deeper.
Well,
yeah,
novels,
but novels have no visual. I mean, have no visual.
I think the problem.
Foundation.
I think
the
yeah,
novel is all words.
There's
nothing there that you're trying that you're a slave to. With Watchmen, you're
well,
a slave
visuals,
to.
Though, but I'm saying as
well,
far as
I mean.
The length of a.
No, no, but you're doubling that length because not only are you have the words, the text in the book, but now it's you have every panel, every page, you're a slave to
people
that.
Know,
as opposed
people
to in a novel.
People know what Rorschach looks like. People know,
what,
in their mind
they know
what Manhattan looks like.
Yeah, they know what it is. You can't
those,
and, yeah, you can't take a novel and go, well, this is my idea of
which
what
is the
this
problem
looks like.
And well, but that's the problem.
I was talking about more of the length. I'm not even talking about visuals of a movie or a book. I was
just
saying, like, I don't think Watchmen is as big of a tale that can't be conquered into movies as people might think, because there's been much longer novel. I'm talking about, like, the actual length. When you read
well, yeah,
Watchmen,
but novels are ripped to shreds, usually.
But I also think the weird thing...
There's still great movies based on novels.
Yeah.
Even though they're ripped to shreds.
No, true enough.
That's
I mean, I think the weird thing, though, is I think if you took one character out of Watchmen, there's a weird time shift too of like if you take
well,
one certain
well, it's so intertwined.
Thread,
it's
one certain thread of like a 2-hour movie. Maybe if you take Watchmen, you make the whole thing. You know, you get 2 hours out of a character, but all of a sudden, if you separate them from everything else, I mean, it's like it's a weird thing because you're taking one entire work of fiction that exists in and of itself that has its
well,
own
I mean,
way of working.
Going back to like if
and
you,
then
a novel, you know, it's
yeah,
like you take a novel and you're going to turn it into a film.
Sure.
There's always things that are being taken out of
oh,
a
yeah,
novel.
Yeah.
You know,
that's like, that, all I was saying was like,
but with Watchmen, in order to do that, I think the only point was if you take anything out of it, which you're going to have to do, you take away from that. You know,
but I think that's
as someone that loves the original story,
right.
Someone that loves the comic.
I think
I know you didn't care for it.
Well, no,
but as someone
I'm
that loves it,
this completely objectively. I'm not.
But if you
but
take,
I think a lot
but that story,
like that,
but a lot, but that book, I think those characters and all those storylines are so interweaved. It's all based on time, and,
well,
and
I think
it's
also,
it's all interweaved
and
so much.
But that's the thing.
No, no, it's about time. I mean, it's the whole story is about time. It's about.
That
them
is
throughout
odd thing,
history,
is like
I mean,
time passing.
Yeah, it is.
Because
about
I think
and you all of a sudden take part of that away,
place over
right, and back and forth, and I mean, it certainly can be done. I'm not saying it can't be done. I just think it's going to be really difficult to do.
I am looking forward to it because I think it'll be interesting to see someone.
I don't see them being able. I just don't see them going into it, going, "We're going to tell this entire tale and try."
I mean,
I just don't think
they
can.
Like Sky was saying, they shouldn't. And I mean, you really shouldn't. You shouldn't be a slave to your
make it a good
to your audience because you know what? Those people that are complaining are going to be the first ones in line.
But also, the thing is that
complain about it after they see it.
Well,
and they're a small percentage.
Exactly.
People that complain it's about like the original book. Well, you have the original book. Go reread it.
That's what I
would say. If you want to see it,
every time somebody. I've said this about remakes of movies, about movies based on comics, movies based on novels. Who gives a fucking shit? As long as it
doesn't change anything,
as long as it's a good movie, I still have the source material that I love.
And
like
if
the
it's
Harry
bad,
Potter movies for me.
If
why you like those Harry Potter movies? They are enjoyable because I get to see a live version of a character that I enjoyed reading.
If the Watchmen movie is terrible, it does not. Go back and destroy your copy
that's
of
what
Watchmen.
I mean,
if you
I mean,
want it, like,
and why did they remake Halloween? Why not?
I mean, we talked about this before. It's like, you know, comic book movies in general, you know, have not been good. Most of them are just not good.
As movies,
as movies, they're not good.
Yeah, on the average, yeah.
But if you take the comic book away and just sit down and do your best to watch this as a movie, is this a good movie?
But at the same time, it's like I give them a pass over other movies.
Because we read comics.
Because, it's like Fantastic Four 2.
Well, you're just more interested.
Is it a good movie? No, it's not a good movie, but there's still part of me that is geeked out because Silver Surfer is running around. Something I wanted to see.
I didn't give that movie even close to a pass.
Well, it's not a good movie. I'm not going to defend it, but it's just, for me, I'll watch it because I'll still enjoy it. Right. You know what I mean? There's things that I enjoy, so.
I believe it.
Living in Tennessee, the years that I did live in there, like, it was just 4 or 5 years, it is the same way. Everybody wanted to get out, but you're never near. It's like you live in your
you
one little
city.
You
were in an area of Tennessee that people want to get out of, though.
But nobody ever does. Yeah, everybody always wants to.
It's like the waiting place.
Yeah.
Actually, it is a lot.
Yeah. Green Bay, I have so many friends that I went to high school with in Green Bay that still live in Green Bay.
Yeah.
And now that I'm getting closer to 30, like, those people aren't going to leave Green Bay.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If they haven't left there by now,
yeah, if you're almost...
Well, Green Bay is a huge city compared to...
Green Bay is like 96,000 people.
Well, compared to... I mean, you stayed in where, Bristol or Kingsport?
70,000 people.
Oh, I didn't know it was that big.
And then
are you counting the other three cities?
No. Kingsport then is 80,000, I think,
I mean,
Johnson
like,
City equal
Green
to that.
Green Bay, when Green Bay won the Super Bowl and they had a ticker tape parade, the biggest building in Green Bay is 8 stories tall, so when they dropped all the tape, it just hit the ground.
Yeah.
8 stories isn't enough fucking space for ticker tape to start, like...
Well, I think, for me, it was, I mean, like I said, part of it was... Grown up here in the suburbs, I mean, I loved the suburbs. I loved growing up there. I had an awesome kind of childhood and everything. But then I had a lot of family here, and we had the city. So it was like, where am I going to go otherwhere? You know,
that's why I asked you. Yeah.
But I think part of it too is like my parents were from different states. They both moved when they were young.
Mm-hmm. To Chicago.
To Chicago, met here,
so you were,
got married, and lived in the same house.
You grew up in a destination instead of...
Yeah, when most people are... When you're younger and you want to get out of where you want to get out of, it's usually because... There's such a limit to the opportunity near you.
Right.
There's nothing
exactly.
To do.
And here, anybody who disses the suburbs of Chicago, I say fuck them, because... The suburbs here are pretty sweet, and you're connected to Chicago anyway, but there's all the opportunity in the world.
Yeah, well, I never really wanted to live downtown. I didn't like... I loved downtown. I loved the city.
By the
city.
Way, nobody we know lives downtown. Everybody...
Well, I don't mean that. When I say downtown, I don't mean downtown.
Yeah.
I didn't want to live in the city because I didn't like the daily sort of hustle and bustle of city life.
Sure.
It's just not for me. But it was, it's 30 minutes for me.
There when you want to go experience.
I mean, I can go down, It's like, I can go downtown anytime I want. I come down every Friday night here, or not downtown.
Well,
but.
The weird thing for me is that even when I was a little kid, I wanted to live, in a big city. That's always what I've wanted. Because growing up in Green Bay, and it's such a weird thing because it delves into, the differences between, siblings, too. Like, I'm very extroverted, and I'm very sociable, and my brother's very introverted. And the second I could leave Green Bay, I left and went to Madison. And then the second I could leave Madison, I went to Chicago, Because that was always, and I have my best friend from high school was the exact same way. We always talked about, leaving Green Bay. He lives in New York now, and there's people that we know that still live in Green Bay. But there's always this thing of, there's nothing in Green Bay for you unless you want to get married when you're 25 and have kids. And it's not to say that's not... okay to do. Like, I don't want to be
not
like
everybody
that.
Wants to do
not
that.
Not everyone wants yeah. to do that, but that's what... Right. If you're 28 and you're single and you want to do something, like...
Right.
I mean, Green Bay isn't necessarily the place for you.
Well, that was the thing. Like, for me, it was like, okay, I had the city here, so it was like my choices, if I wanted something else, was either something more rural yes. or it's, right. you know, L.A. or New York.
Yeah,
and I knew I wouldn't...
It's hard to go bigger.
What about yeah. you? Because you were in Jackson?
I was in Jackson, Tennessee.
And that is...
I'm going
that's
to Jackson. Jackson.
Yeah. Jackson, Tennessee is about 80 miles... west of Memphis.
Memphis, right.
And it's, I don't even know what
the... Memphis is a big-ass city, but
Well, exactly. Well, when you grow up in Jackson, Memphis is the big city.
Is the big city.
And that's what I thought. I had moved to the big city when I went to college, and I stayed there for about...
Isn't that a shocker?
10 years, and I was... And I always...
Memphis is a little hardcore, right? I mean...
Well, define hardcore. Hardcore in that, I mean, all of the... inconvenience of a big city, like
with none of the benefits,
crime and stuff.
Right, that's what I mean.
None like, of the benefit. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of that.
Like when you hear "Dirty South," that
oh, that's for real.
You're talking about
oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
Atlanta and places like Memphis oh, and Atlanta. Yeah. Like
my
people don't understand. Like that shit is
yeah.
dirty.
My girlfriend and her friends make a trip to Memphis every year on Memorial Day, just because
just
they've
go.
Done because
well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah,
but they leave. They don't stay.
Well, you don't want to. I love Memphis. I love Memphis. Yeah. I would go back there if all of my friends weren't up here now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I love the place. I love the idea that it's an underdog city and that everybody craps on them and all says how yeah. crappy Memphis is. I love the idea of living in that city. It's just like fuck all y'all.
Fuck you.
I love Memphis.
But I mean, you grow up and you go to Memphis and then you think, oh, there's bigger than this. I don't know if I can handle that. That's why, I mean, I moved.
Because you moved here to work at Devil's Due,
yeah,
correct?
I moved here when I was 29. Yeah. So that's when I moved to the big city.
Right.
You know, so.
Because you've been here 6 years?
Yeah, almost seven well, now.
But I think it's such a weird thing because I know when I moved to Chicago, I didn't have a job. I just moved to Chicago.
I couldn't do that. See, that's why it took
either.
Me so long.
I just moved to Chicago because
well, no,
I was like,
I will not lie, because I worked at Bennigan's in Bloomington, Illinois, and I transferred to the Bennigan's downtown here. So I did have a job.
I had
for me.
No
well,
job.
Even that kind of security I
but that's
dealt
not,
with.
Yeah, that's, but even that's not real secure.
No. But when I
well,
look,
no, you just, you know you can pay
see,
your
see, but
rent,
the weird
right.
thing is when I look back on when I decided to move to Chicago, I was like, God, I must have been fucking crazy. I was like, I just
we
moved
all crazy
to Chicago.
When you're young, yeah.
I was like, God, I just moved to Chicago with, I had like $600, and I moved into my place, and that
yeah,
was
that
it.
That is crazy.
Yeah. See, I wish
I had. I don't know what I would have done.
And actually, at that time, because I think I came with around the same amount of money, because
yeah.
where you're from, $600, you think, well, I'm rolling with a fucking bankroll.
In Chicago, that's like 2 months.
Yeah.
If you
or a
are
dinner out.
Yeah.
two months
if you're
not living,
living
anywhere.
Living with 12 people.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you are.
If
I mean, like,
car.
If you're really stretching shit, yeah. that is...
That's my Best Buy bill a week.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I do wish I would have been a little crazier than I was. I mean, I was like
I
the
do,
model
I do
of,
too.
You know, civility and, I mean... But it was sort of where I came from.
You got married very young,
yes,
though, as well,
I got
right?
married very
to
young.
To your high school sweetheart.
To my high school sweetheart. And yeah, we're still together.
Still together.
And now
yeah.
we have kids.
So I mean, you saw what you're.
But
like.
It was what I came from. I mean, like I said, my parents met yeah. when they were 20
right.
something, got married when they were 22,
right.
stayed together until they both died, and lived in the same house. And it was, I mean, that's what I knew. That was
right.
sort of what I
yeah.
knew. And it was funny because when I was really young, you know, not really, but when I was probably a young teenager, it was like the last thing I ever wanted to be. Was my dad.
Sure.
And not because my dad was a bad guy, but it was like he was prototypical, you know, get up, lunchbox guy, worked
yeah.
the same job
yep.
for 35 years.
My dad did.
And loved it. I mean, he, you know, literally, you know, that's what his life was.
This is like bring it back to comic books. My dad, whenever this is a weird thing to say, but whenever I see Earth 2 Superman with like the gray hair, I think of my dad. And I really do, because my dad like owns a construction company. And my dad gets up like every day at
like
5:30. Yeah.
yeah.
And like that no, but my dad's like the ultimate, like to me, the ultimate pillar of
stability.
Like, yeah, of stability yeah. and like what my dad does is right, and that has always been sort of a weird attachment that I have to that character, is because that character always reminds me
of my dad. Yeah, and that's a. I mean, that's a very personal, weird thing. Yeah, but
my dad is the same.
No,
thing.
I know what you. I had the same thing with.
But it all depends.
But
on
only
you think of your
more
dad.
Visually right. than anything else was Captain Marvel. Shazam, which is why, like, one of the reasons
I could totally see that
because my dad. Looked,
I could totally see your
well,
dad
I look,
being
I
like,
look, I look a lot like
yeah,
my dad, but
we
he
could just put
even,
the suit on you right now.
Even
Come
more
on,
so,
go.
He yeah. looked like that character, right. and I always dude. Had the same weird sort of connection. He's always been one of my favorite characters, and my dad at the same time was like this pillar of stability. I mean, he worked three jobs to take care of his kids. He, right. I mean,
when
he was just that guy.
When
you
I
know?
Was a little kid and I first started reading comic books, like my dad. To me was like the strongest man who
yeah.
ever lived,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, and like I was like, well, my dad's like Superman, and that's right. always stuck in my mind
yeah.
since that point. Like, my
and like I said,
like
when I was younger, I didn't. That was like going into high school. That was the last thing I wanted to end up being, and it ends up that's sort of what I am now.
Well, you find out very quickly. I think. I mean, I think yeah. I had different patches of time with my dad where things were good and not so good, but. It is a weird thing as you get older to find out that
how much you
no
are.
Matter what the fuck you do,
no shit.
You do
oh, yeah.
not fall
far.
I mean, I am, I have lived my life to this point in so much the opposite style that my dad has lived his life.
But
yet,
you catch yourself with certain things.
But yeah. as you hear the way that we talk, the way that we say anything, I mean, it's like, we didn't, you know, I have lived away from my dad two times longer than I ever actually lived in his house. And you would think that I spent every moment with him.
Right.
And it's fucking
well,
weird.
That's,
it
is.
DNA
weird
is like, a son of a bitch.
It is a son of a bitch.
When you,
son of a bitch.
When you talk, like, my dad, like, you could not possibly pick two possible more opposite personalities than mm-hmm. my dad's, like, is very Spartan, very, like, he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
My dad's very quiet. Whenever he says anything, it has a lot of gravitas because he doesn't say a
my
goddamn
dad says,
word.
Fuck a lot and let's go smoke.
Like, my dad just sits around, my dad will just sit
wow,
silently.
You are him.
My dad will just sit really silently for, like, 45 minutes and he'll say, like, one thing that's either really funny.
Is your dad
or
a
really,
robot?
Yes, he is. But every once in a while, and I'm the exact opposite. Like, my mouth, I just fucking, my mouth
shut
just
up.
Runs constantly. Yeah, like, I just can't shut up, and that's a huge joke in my family. But the thing is, like, every once in a while, I caught myself, like, saying things like my dad would say.
Yeah.
And it's a very
yeah,
weird
right.
thing, because I'm not
too.
Really anything like my dad, yeah. like, yeah.
Well,
personality-wise.
My handwriting, I swear to God, exactly like the motherfucker.
That's interesting.
It is the weirdest thing.
One of the things, like, growing up, I have four older sisters,
yeah.
and my... my father has four brothers and two sisters. None of them had boys. The few that had children had all girls. And my parents have four girls before they had me. And so, like, I then became sort of the the keeper of the flame for my family name.
That's a lot.
I mean, it was like pressure as a kid.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because I was, you know, it's like I had to, you know, it's like, and then when I had kids, then it was like my first child was daughter.
Right.
So then it was just
shit.
Like, oh Jesus Christ, what's she gonna
get
have to
work,
go through?
Motherfucker.
I got, you know, so I had a son, but it was a weird thing because it was like. And
now
then
does he have that pressure now?
Not yet. Hopefully never. But
you're the last.
You are
you're
the
fucking right now, Jack.
Yeah.
I am the last.
So it was
dragon.
It was this weird. But like we would go down. My father's from Texas. We'd go down to Texas, and he's got a lot of family down there. He's got these four brothers, and they're all very similar. So much. His one brother, his youngest brother, it is a freakish thing now to see him because they were almost twins.
Right.
I mean, they looked so much alike. Yeah. That when my father passed away years ago, and when he did, and we had a funeral down there because he passed away when he was in Texas, and then we came back and we had another one here, and my uncle Mickey, right. who looks just like my father, was here, yeah. and like my friends came to the funeral
That's
and
creepy.
Were
freaked out.
I mean, when they saw him
too.
And jaws dropped.
I
because
have,
it, and
did
yeah.
your grandfather work for the Manhattan Project?
I don't know.
All the men in my family. Look, have all the same face. Like, I have the same face as my dad, and my brother has the same face. And my dad, when I went to a wedding last weekend, and my girlfriend, I was like, I want to play a game where you pick out my dad's brothers. Because right. he has, like, four of them. And she picked them out in about 5 minutes.
Right.
She was like, that guy, and that guy who looks just like your dad. Right. Like,
I was weird. None of my, like, looks-wise, my dad and I have the same face. but there is absolutely nobody in my family that's tall.
Yeah, you were saying your brother is like...
My brother is, he's really short. He's maybe 5'5" or 5'6". my sisters are tall for women. For girls. Yeah. But, I mean, my stepmom, well, obviously they come from a stepmom, but my dad is, he's not over 6 foot. I think maybe he's 5'9", 5'10", maybe 5'9". My mom's very short. Nobody I know in my family.
Just a freaking midget.
Yeah, just a big freaking midget. 6'4", came out of a bunch of midgets.
What the fuck? What happened to him?
Yeah.
Well, we would go down to Texas, and it was like, this weird, now it's like my sister's going to Texas in December, and I won't even go down there because it's like this weird, they look at me and see my dad now,
right.
And now it's like this weird thing that I have to deal with of all my relatives from there, like, thinking I'm my dad. I'm like, I'm not him, you know. And he was a heart.
Do they all have Alzheimer's?
No, but it's just a weird. I don't know. I think it's something to do with my nationality too.
Sure.
It's something to do with
the heritage or whatever the culture that.
Yeah, the culture.
You have to go down there and settle all those old scores.
Yeah, well, they're.
My dad cast a big name like Bill Bones or something.
El Diablo.
Another trip, another knife fight. God.
No, that's not even a joke. I could get into a lot of stories about my dad.
All right, right.
But I won't.
All right, let's
wrap up this.
Sorry, I brought it up.
This is the bonus.
We're all getting ready to go. That's not even a touchy situation now.
No, that was. There's a lot. No. He was a great dad. It was long before that, but he had
El Diablo.
He was El Diablo.
As soon as you said his name's the devil, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, all right.
Let's move on to something else. Let's complain. We'll complain about me.
That will wrap up another.
I'm ready to roll.
Chris is here.
Time machine.
What's wrong?
From Chicago.
We already did it, man. We're done.
We're done, dude.
It's food time now, motherfucker.
How did you
didn't wait for me?
What the fuck are you doing here?
Your shirt looks a lot like Greg Rucka.
Yeah. Why you got lotion all over yourself?
You know, actually, it was funny because he was a little upset when I got there.
Because you were there?
You remember what he gave me in New York, right?
Your hoodie.
Yeah.
And you weren't wearing
it. I walked up to the signing, and he's like, "Hey, Chris, where's your sweatshirt at?"
Did you meet Brian Azzarello?
No, I didn't. I didn't make it to the comic shop. I ended up going to the bookstore signing because he's touring on the new Atticus Kodiak.
And he's not in your trunk or anything, right? Greg's not locked up in your trunk or.
So I'm driving back from Milwaukee, and I call my wife. Honey, I'm on my way back. She's like, "Really? It's kind of early." I said, "Yeah, you know, it was just wanted to head on back." She's like, "You don't have Greg in the trunk, do you?"
Let me out! I have the right checkmate.
he said hi to everybody.
Hello,
Greg.
He's doing well. I think he's been lifting.
Looking good. You shouldn't really. God,
wow.
You're scaring me, dude.
You're gay. Let's just get it out.
Oh my God,
gay.
You made yourself that's about 10 feet beneath the ground before you got here, and then you're like, "That's not deep enough."
Yeah.
But no, he implored everyone to go out and buy Crime Bible.
Of course you
do. So we'll hopefully
why,
be.
Why would he do that?
So I think we'll be talking with him here soon about that.
I love Greg and his whoring.
Yes,
I do. I mean, that's the only self-respecting thing you can do. I mean, come on, it's comic books.
Checkmate,
shit, man. Yeah, come on.
All right. Well, that'll end this episode. A few announcements here. Remember, you can join our Friends of the Program. Go to AroundComics.com.
See, what's with us and the fucking shitty, shit. Awkward names?
I did it on purpose. where you can download and print out our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask Friends your comic shop program. Manager or owner if they will display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show, as well as posted on our site, become a friend of the program. I'd like to say thank you to Brian Bruce from the USS Abraham Lincoln, who displayed the flyer.
We've been entered into the Navy chain of command.
Yes,
chain of command.
We are now official Navy men. Seamen.
Dirty.
And so join our friends of the program today.
Normal people, we have things like Bang Boat and Bookworm Bitches, but for Chris, it's iTunes reviews.
Nine more, baby. Nine
so
more.
If,
up to the magic 200.
So go to iTunes and leave reviews.
Really? Holy shit.
Sorry.
It's been productive Friday.
We got two more.
I'm going to wipe everything off the table and get angry.
And the latest one, that 193, was one of the most eloquent and well-crafted
Oscar
reviews.
Wilde wrote it himself.
Yes, Oscar Wilde threw that in there. So,
so thanks to the people that came and left iTunes reviews.
Thanks for all those people that
like
electronically
Bert,
ejaculated.
Bert Lib, this is engine. RRP. You know, 540.
Rock, you know what? Props to Jay Tomio.
Yeah,
that's his fucking name. You know what?
And as a hint. Just write your name.
Yeah. Guess what? What are you ashamed of on iTunes?
Yeah, RRP, like RRP 540.
It could have some deep personal.
Oh, no. Yeah. RRP 540 is a shame because he gave the, like, Jennifer Love Hewitt album, like, 5 stars.
Yeah.
He has
no one. You do that, too.
To
I'm like, okay, what else is this?
Horse Whisperer is awesome.
I'd like to remind everyone that this episode was sponsored by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection point blank to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $9.72. You can now read Ed Brubaker's amazing 5-issue prologue to the critically acclaimed Sleeper for less than $10. InStockTrades.com. Your new best friend.
Thank you. Your new best friend should be Hero Initiative. We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and ask if Greg Rucka's okay. Greg Rucka might need medical help.
He might need Hero Initiative.
Him.
Yeah, a little tease here. You're going to be hearing a lot about Hero Initiative in the coming month. We've got some really cool stuff coming up with them.
There might be a totally sweet Tom's Couch, which you haven't heard yet.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Scotty, Tom, Mike Norton, Tim Seeley was here briefly.
Satan. He's always present
Chris
in our recordings.
For stopping in.
I feel like a guest. This is great.
And thanks to Mark at Dark Tower for hosting us as always. Everyone, have a fantastic week. We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode featuring...
Monday will be Jason Aaron.
Jason Aaron.
Nice.
In the meantime...
Scalp this!
We'll be Ghost everywhere
Rider,
in and around comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007. All rights reserved.
love you, babe. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby. Baby, love you one more time.